They also prefer proximity to their embassies. This presents a pattern of the most expensive hotels within a bounded geography. Intelligence services love predictability. A longtime asset, a hotel employee, gave us a list of incoming foreign leaders who would be staying at the hotel. We checked with HQS to determine the level of interest from which we calculated the risk and investment. We weighed the cost of translation, analysis, and logistics support versus the potential intelligence gain. I never wanted to repeat the intelligence failure of my first black bag job from years earlier. With a target selected, we directed our asset. He would replace a common remote control device in the target's room with a specially modified one designed to capture audio and transmit to the nearby listening post. Sometimes the collection was of great value, particularly for those foreign leaders who hosted others for political discussions. Sometimes our effort was of modest value, but we usually got something. Politicians love to talk, and we gained useful insight into the personality and character of these foreign leaders. In one case, we documented the foreign official's view of his U.S. counterpart. It was not flattering, but in my view, it was highly accurate. We sent the intelligence through a highly restricted channel, tagged for the U.S. official. I wondered how he reacted when he read our report. In another case, a foreign leader outlined his strategy toward a neighboring country, a close ally of the United States. We forwarded this report to HQS and the CIA stations in both countries for their review and comment. The commentary reinforced and expanded on previous assessments, adding important new twists. We provided the intelligence to U.S. policymakers and to our allied service in the neighboring country. Our ally, in turn, provided us more information about the country in question. It was a great example of unilateral intelligence bolstering foreign liaison intelligence. Sometimes we collected far more personal information than we needed or wanted. I instructed our translators to use discretion, but sometimes they could not resist. They would share with me details excluded from the final report. I would never again view some foreign leaders in the same light. Certainly, I would never again look at any remote control device the same way. Foreign policy. We had been able to penetrate a certain foreign embassy's premises with a local service technician who had routine access, at least to the outer offices of the embassy. Under CIA supervision, he had installed two bugs to cover two areas. The host concealment devices, however, limited the size of the batteries and the transmitters, so the broadcast range was extremely short. We had planned to rent a nearby apartment as a listening post, but that transaction collapsed. We searched and searched for an alternative, but could not find one, nothing close enough to receive the signal. I found the situation absurd. Given all the CIA's resources, including our local agent network, we could not rent or even buy an apartment close enough to the site. We had already installed the audio devices, because we had been certain of the available apartment. But now the entire operation seemed in jeopardy. Our failure to establish a listening post would kill the entire project, after taking the risk of penetrating the target embassy. I did not want to send that cable to HQS explaining that a tight real estate market had bested us. It seemed too mundane to accept. One night we mounted a small repeater inside a utility box near the targeted embassy. The implant boosted the signal, but it was still insufficient to reach any apartment that we could rent. We studied and studied the area, with maps and on foot. Nothing. My frustration grew, and it showed. In hindsight, the eventual answer was obvious. It was bobbing on the water in the harbor next to the utility box that housed our repeater. It was a boat. We even knew an owner of a pleasure craft in that harbor. We asked for his help. He agreed, and soon shifted his boat to another slip, close to the target embassy and our repeater. We outfitted his boat with a huge repeater, and presto, we now bounce the signal from the target embassy to the utility box to the boat, then all the way to the station. It took several weeks and 2 relay points, but we had our audio beaming directly into our transcriber's office. The audio collection, relayed transmission to station, translation, reporting, and dissemination to both U.S. government customers and allies took only a couple of days. The turnaround could be improved to hours, even minutes if needed. The operation produced superior intelligence for many months, until the local power company somehow discovered the repeater in the utility box. Fortunately, there was no way to trace the device back to us. It never even made the local papers. We learned about the compromise from a unilateral source of the host government, who figured it was our operation. We regrouped and eventually found another site for the repeater, and the operation continued for years. The intelligence, pulled from one of the target country's most important embassies, fluctuated from good to outstanding. It was one of the best audio operations in which I participated. Agent Kamo. My wife Cindy and I quietly chatted about our weekend vacation as we waited in line at the tiny airport's customs barrier. We had passed through such procedures countless times. It was tedious. It was hot and humid. Through the dirty windows, I could see the palm trees outside gently waving in the sea breeze. I could hear the traffic. Inside the dirty and dank customs room, there was no breeze. There was the sour smell of body odor. There was very little noise. Everybody was quiet and respectful. We all wanted to get through without a hassle, without a fuss, without having to pay a bribe. Any imperfect answers or sign of disrespect to the customs officers could hinder the process for hours. Once at the table, we displayed our worn backpacks and our old dented aluminum cooler. There was no X-ray machine, just the inspectors. They asked a couple of questions. They rummaged through our bags. They looked inside the cooler. It was only food, not even any beer. They waved us through. I slung my pack over my shoulder and hefted the cooler to a waiting taxi. In the taxi, Cindy and I said very little. We were both enjoying the relief of our success. We had just smuggled espionage communications equipment through the border. It had been relatively easy, but that never seemed to detract from the thrill. There was no other feeling quite like it. It was a short ride to the small beach house that we had reserved. Once inside, we slugged some water, secured our gear, and walked down a steep and rickety stairway to the beach. The water lapped at my legs. Waist deep, I could see my feet. Clear, calm, and languid, the ocean stretched for miles and wrapped around this small ancient town. We looked back inland at the palm trees scattered among the old stone buildings and walls. What a great place for an espionage mission. The next afternoon we explored the town. We spent hours walking and stopping at stores, street vendors, and a couple of thatched roof cafes. We looked at ruins, boats, landscape paintings, fabrics, carvings, and trinkets. Cindy took some photos. There were other visitors doing the same, mostly Europeans, and a few Asians among the black and mixed-race population. We continued our wanderings, which I had earlier planned while looking at a map. Each pathway and each stop was part of our surveillance detection route. It was more effective with somebody else, because you had reason to stop and talk, which provided more opportunity to spot surveillance. There was more natural interaction, more cover for a young couple wandering through a beach town. As dusk slowly wrapped around us, and as the muezzin's call to prayer faded into the soft, heavy air, we made our way into the warren of narrow streets in the oldest part of the town. We were still clean of surveillance. We turned a corner and spotted the door only a few yards away. I knocked once. Immediately, a small, gnarly man yanked the door open. We stepped inside. He grasped my hand and pumped it hard. He slapped me on the back. He hugged Cindy. He bounced around in excitement. We had only met him twice previously, once in Europe for a day of debriefings. Yet our bond was deep. Our high-risk mission and our mutual trust held us close. He was one of the CIA's most successful spies. I was the latest CIA officer of several who had the honor to work with him over the decades. He eventually calmed himself long enough to introduce us to his wife. Quiet and gracious, as he was loud and boisterous, she welcomed us to their home. He started cracking silly jokes. She looked at him with the patience and love of a devoted partner. He gave us a tour of his home, jammed with antiques and books. She returned to the kitchen, from where the hot, spicy dinner's aroma spread through the house. We sat at a small table